I am Paul Harris. Dan Strauss and Ian Geis are here with me. And now Colin Jeffrey joins us for the showbiz segment of the show. Hi, Colin. How are you?
Doing well. How are you today, Paul?
Good. We have a couple of movies to get to and then a bunch of TV-related stories. If you don't mind, I'd like to start with the first movie review today.
Let's do it.
It's a movie called The Founder. And before I talk about the movie, I just want to tell you, I was thinking about it today before I came in here, having seen the movie a couple of nights ago. It's about Ray Kroc, who called himself the founder of McDonald's. And I'll get to that called himself thing in a second. But I worked at McDonald's as a teenager. And I still remember going in there as a 17 or 18-year-old kid, not having worked in any restaurant before, and having to learn the McDonald's system. There was training that went into learning the way two people work the grill and cook the burgers or the, you know, the breakfast stuff or whatever it was. There are other people whose job is just to prepare the buns with the condiments, the pickles, the onions, the ketchup, the mustard. They had special squirters that gave out exactly the right, you push that thing down and the exactly the right amount of ketchup came out, etc. So that was somebody's job. Somebody else's job was fries. There was a fry guy. There was somebody who was in charge of the drinks. Okay, she's going to make all the sodas. In the days before you had a cup and a thing that you filled yourself as a customer, you know, ice, soda, and shakes. And by the way, in my day, they were never called milkshakes because there was no milk in them, which is part of the plot of this movie. And you'll see why if you go see the movie. But I went there and I thought, wow, this is fascinating because I knew nothing about the food industry, certainly nothing about the fast food industry. I just figured that's how all restaurants like that worked. What I didn't know was that the concept of doing that in a restaurant, like an assembly line, had been created by Dick and Mac McDonald, two brothers who created the Speedy Service System in 1954 at the restaurant they owned in San Bernardino, California. And it was this efficient assembly line approach that literally created the fast food industry by having items ready for customers within 30 seconds and set the standard for how the business would work from there. And I also didn't know anything about Ray Kroc, who called himself the founder, and I didn't know how he had screwed the McDonald brothers royally after convincing them to let him franchise the business. And that's what this movie is about. It starts in 1954. We meet Ray Kroc here in St. Louis. Of course, anytime you're in a movie and St. Louis comes up on the screen, people always go that, oh, I didn't know we were going to be in this movie. Yeah, it was 1954. You're not in the movie. It happened to be in the town that you live in, but that's a, and then later on, he drives to Belleville and he drives to Chesterfield. And every time you see those road signs, people go, oh, yeah, well, we know that, where that is.
But there was no arch.
There was no arch at the time. That's correct. So at the time, Ray Kroc was a traveling salesman. He was trying to convince drive-in burger joints and diners to buy these milkshake mixers that he was pushing, and not very successfully. They didn't want these multi-mixers, which could make five shakes at a time. But then one day, he's calling into the office to see if there are any messages, and the secretary there says, well, yeah, we did get a call from this restaurant in San Bernardino, California. They've ordered six.
Wow.
And he said, what? I'm out here struggling to sell one. You got one place that wants six? You must have made a mistake. Give me the phone number. I'm going to call them. And he calls up, and Mac McDonald answers the phone. And he says, hi, this is Ray Kroc from whatever the company was. I got a thing here that you ordered six of our multi-mixers. That can't be right. And Mac McDonald says, you know what? You're probably right. And Ray goes, yeah, well, I thought so. And Mac goes, we'll take eight. And at that point, Ray Kroc decides, I don't know who these guys are, but I am driving to wherever they are. So he drives from St. Louis out Route 66. There were no interstate highways at the time. He goes out Route 66 all the way to California, and he meets these guys. And when he gets there and sees their speedy service system and everything else that they're doing, he supposedly saw the future. Now, in the movie, Ray Kroc is played by Michael Keaton, who I've always liked. He is so good at playing a guy down on his luck, on the verge of bankruptcy in this movie, who recognizes an opportunity and then turns on the people that he's supposed to be helping. Michael Keaton is on screen almost every second of The Founder. And I've got to tell you, it is a riveting performance. He gives Kroc this kind of charming salesman slash businessman veneer. Even when he's unlikable, you kind of still like the guy, even though he turns out to be kind of a dick. Nick Offerman and John Carroll Lynch are perfect as the McDonald brothers, who readily welcome Kroc into their restaurant and show him their system, a decision that they are going to come to regret. Laura Dern plays Ethel, who is Ray Kroc's first wife. They were in a loveless marriage because he was on the road all the time, and she was miserable, and it wasn't good when they were together either. You also have Linda Cardellini in this as Joan Kroc, who became Joan Kroc, his third wife, after he fell for... She's married to somebody else,
okay,
but ends up as Joan Kroc. Strangely, there's no mention in this movie of Jane Kroc, who was his second wife. It's like she didn't exist, so she's not in there at all. Now, the guy who made this movie, John Lee Hancock, is the director. He made The Blind Side, and he made Saving Mr. Banks. So he knows how to make biopics about bigger-than-life characters. And here he takes Kroc, who launched one of the most successful companies in the world, and shows you there's more to the Ray Kroc story than the shiny, polished image that McDonald's wants you to believe. Now, I will tell you that if you're thinking to yourself, I don't want to see a movie about a businessman starting up a big corporation with no action and nothing else going on, it's all this stuff that Ray Kroc does to the McDonald brothers as he's building what he sees as the future of the fast food industry that's just been created. It's how he does it and what he does to them and how he deals with everybody else that makes this movie work, with Michael Keaton giving a great performance. I'm giving it an 8 out of 10.
Wow.
The Founder. The Founder, it's called.
Is it wide release?
It is. It is opening today, and it's playing all over the place.
Yeah.
In fact, the studio has taken out huge ads for it that when you see them, you'll say, oh, it's a McDonald's ad. No, it's not a McDonald's ad. It's an ad for The Founder, which is about Ray Kroc, who called himself The Founder, even though he wasn't The Founder.
Yeah.
He didn't even come up with the Golden Arches. Mac McDonald did that. So, or Dick McDonald, I can't remember. One of the two McDonald brothers did that. And it's fascinating the way they tell this whole story of two brothers getting screwed out of this business that they started by the guy who saw the potential and really exploded it into popularity.
And I guess the two brothers, they're still around, right? They're still alive?
I don't know if they're still around. He's not around. Ray Kroc died about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I don't think the McDonald brothers are around anymore. That was 60 years ago, and they were already in their 30s at the time, so I doubt it very much, but I don't know. I do know they did not get the money that Ray Handshake dealed them out of, but I don't want to give too much away.
Okay.
So that's called The Founder, 8 out of 10. What did you go see this week?
I went to see Split. Before I get to that, though, I'll just mention the other movie that's going to be challenging Split for the top at the box office is XXX Return of Xander Cage. I think it was in the 90s, there was a movie XXX in which Vin Diesel played Xander Cage, and a sort of alternative adrenaline sports star. He liked snowboarding and skydiving and everything, and he gets recruited by Samuel L. Jackson and the government to infiltrate groups that they can't, because he's a true sort of fringes of society guy, and he'll be able to help them, and he gets all sorts of gadgets, and he's a secret government agent. Then they did a second one, XXX State of the Union, except they brought in Ice Cube to replace Xander Cage, and it was stupid.
Vin Diesel wasn't in that one?
No.
Okay.
They went, because he became a much bigger star. Well, now Vin Diesel's coming back and saying, hey, you know what? Let's do this again. So XXX Return of Xander Cage.
Now, let me just interrupt you. Is Vin Diesel doing this because he hasn't been a star for a while?
No, he's doing this because they're willing to pay him. He's a big box office draw with Fast and Furious and everything he does. Yeah. So they're willing to pay him.
Okay.
And so in this one, these movies were always about sort of larger than life stunts and ridiculous situations. Well, to give you an idea of what you're preparing for, at one point he jumps off a cliff, it appears, in a motorcycle, and water, like little skis come out of the front of it, and he drives his motorcycle up over some waves on the ocean. So,
is that true?
Based on a true story.
If this sounds like it's up your alley, XXX Return of Xander Cage is out today.
Okay.
It's probably not going to be, it's not a deep thinker.
That doesn't sound like it.
I don't think they're going to be breaking
but
down.
But it's only playing at the Tivoli, right? It's a small movie.
Exactly.
Small
yeah. Art house. they're really exploring the depths of the character.
Yeah. Do we want to go see that French movie, Elle, with Isabelle Huppert? Or do we want to see this other movie with subtitles, Triple X, The Return of Xander Cage?
Yeah.
That's your choice.
That's out there if you need a big action movie. If you're looking for more of a thriller...
Let me just interrupt you one more time. Since we were talking about Vin Diesel, he was in one of the worst movies of last year that made my top 10 worst, Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk.
He was in that?
He was in that movie for about 4 minutes.
Oh.
And how they convinced him to do that, it must have been a check.
Yeah.
The only thing I can think of.
Yeah.
Horrible.
He's Groot, though, as well. He's Groot from Guardians of the Galaxy, in which the only thing he can speak is, I am Groot, but I encourage you to get the special edition or go find the special edition featurette of him doing, there's behind the scenes, because with big movies like that, as opposed to just dubbing in the lines afterwards, they actually have him record the lines.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can hear him in about a dozen different languages. Yo soy Groot. Like he says in every different language, he says, I am Groot.
Okay.
And it's just funny.
All right. So what's the movie you did see this week?
I did see Split, which is the newest M. Night Shyamalan movie. Oh. Last year, he kind of resurrected his career a bit by going with Blumhouse Productions. And all that means, they did like Paranormal Activity. They take small budgets and do these horror movies where if they make 40 or 50 million, they only invested 5 million, they go gangbusters. Yeah. So last year, they gave him a smaller budget for a movie called The Visit, in which two young kids go to visit their grandparents and weird stuff happens. It was pretty good. I enjoyed it last year.
Oh, I wanted to see that, and I didn't, but I want to see this because I saw the previews for this.
So you should see The Visit. This is his newest one, again, with Blumhouse. So you can tell a slightly smaller budget, but he gets a couple of big names. He gets James McAvoy, who...
That's a big name?
That's a big name. He's Professor X in all of the new X-Men movies, the younger Professor X. He's a very talented actor.
Okay.
And
I'm not putting him down. I just don't know him.
That's fair. And he also gets Anya Taylor-Joy. And this is...
Really? He was able to get Anya Taylor-Joy?
Wow.
You know how many producers and directors have been trying to get Anya Taylor-Joy?
You're going to start to notice her more and more. She was in The Witch from last year, which was a horror movie that was very, very good.
Uh-huh.
And she's in sort of another horror psychological thriller this year. So he gets two very good people to carry this. The premise is that James McAvoy is... He has a dissociative identity disorder. He has 23 personalities, and there's concern that a 24th personality may be on the rise. This movie has a sort of pre-title screen. Before it tells you the title of the movie, before you see Split come up on screen, there's a scene that's about 4 or 5 minutes that sets you up for what this is going to be about. And there are three young women who are at a birthday party at the mall, and they get ready to leave. One of their fathers is going to drive them home. And when they all get in the car, the father, someone approaches the father, and you see, who are you? And then you hear a thud. You're inside the car. James McAvoy gets in the car, knocks out the women, and they wake up in some sort of underground bunker, chained or handcuffed. And they're now being held by James McAvoy. We as the audience are going to find out quickly that he has multiple personalities. This could come off as hokey because some of them are women. One of them is a flamboyantly gay man who's very much into design. One is sort of a quiet man with an accent. One is an academic. He has all these different personalities. It could come across as hokey. One of them is like a 9-year-old boy. It doesn't. He commits. You believe it. It's just trust me. It seems like it could go off the rails and just be foolish. No. And Shyamalan returns to sort of that cadence where he gets laughs when he needs them to break the tension. And it doesn't seem like it's going to be high stakes. However, this 24th personality is something called the Beast. That is clearly not good.
Mm-hmm. And your ex-wife finally got in the movie.
All right.
Wow. The other major character is James McAvoy's psychiatrist, who is treating him and believes that this dissociative personality is real and is trying to convince the rest of sort of academia that this is real. He's not faking it. This is real. I'm not going to tell you anything else about the plot at all. You should watch it. It's very good. unfairly, I believe, M. Night Shyamalan has been held to the Sixth Sense standard. Can he do that twist, that paradigm shift that turns everything on its head? I see dead people. And can he do that? And everyone looks for it in his movies. I don't think that's fair. I think he's a good storyteller. I like the vast majority of his movies just from a storytelling point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Go see this movie tonight. Go see this movie tomorrow if you are any sort of fan of his. You do not want the twist spoiled. It is his, not, I'm not going to say best in terms of quality. It changes the entire movie, what you just saw, the twist. Go see this movie.
So you're saying go see it tonight or tomorrow because
so it doesn't get spoiled.
Somebody will spoil it.
There will be some jerk will write, some joker will write on a blog somewhere, oh my gosh, you never saw this, and they will spoil it for you.
Yeah.
And this will upset you. I went from just kind of sitting there and being like, oh, wow, I really like this, to like freaking out and grabbing the person next to me like, oh my gosh, can you believe this?
Wow.
Go
Which,
see
by
this?
The way, you shouldn't do when it's a suspenseful horror movie. Don't be grabbing people in the movie
yeah.
theater.
Yeah, I know.
Scare the heck out of them.
I knew the person. Oh. It wasn't like it was some random stranger. Like,
all right.
Oh, my gosh. I think this is sort of a return to form again. It's continuing to show us that, okay, when we strip away the big budget and all the special effects, if he can just tell us a story, Shyamalan's good at it. And he still has this in his tank. And it's odd to say for a guy that, I don't know if he's 40 now, he's young, to say that, oh, he's returning to form. No, the guy was just sort of a wunderkind. And I enjoyed this. I give it an 8 out of 10.
Wow.
I enjoyed it a whole lot.
Okay. I wish I would have known when you were going to go see it, because I would have gone and seen it with you.
Yes.
Because Sandy doesn't want to see this. It scares her.
It's not
The notion of women kidnapped against their will and forced to stay in a room and handcuffed to the wall.
Yeah.
That bothers her somehow?
Yeah, that scares her.
It's not as scary as I thought. I will say that.
Well, it's PG-13.
Yeah, and it deserves it. There's not, I can't recall, like, horrible language coming up in it.
But speaking of situations like that, how does it compare to that movie a couple of years ago that I loved so much? No, Room.
Room, okay.
Which is about a young woman who's locked in this room by some crazy guy, but she has her son.
Much less intense because he aims for humor to diffuse it so often.
This is less intense than that?
Yes.
Huh.
Because it's the type of movie he's making in this, and there were some decisions that as you're watching, you'd be like, I don't know about this. And then it clicks. Like, just, I'm saying, if you're a fan of his movies, you can't miss this one. And you need to see it soon.
I really want to see it.
Yes.
So 8 out of 10 for Split, starring James McAvoy. And what's her name?
Anya Taylor-Joy.
I prefer Mounds.
Oh, man.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, you were waiting.
Sometimes you feel like
he was waiting.
We'll take a break and we'll come back with more of the Showbiz Show in a moment here on the Big 550 KTRS. So I watched Lip Sync Battle last night on Spike. And the reason I asked Ian to play this, and the only reason I watched it, I came across it. I didn't plan on it. Didn't set the DVR for it. I was just flicking around last night, and I came across it, and it was Jay Leno versus Craig Ferguson. Now, do you know what Lip Sync Battle is?
Because Jimmy started doing it on his show, right?
Jimmy Fallon started it on The Tonight Show with his guests Stephen Merchant and John Krasinski, I guess a couple of years ago. And I remember seeing that clip, and they were all pretty funny doing it. And then Jimmy Fallon must have had somebody come to him and say, hey, we could turn this into a show. And so it's a half-hour show that's been on, is it the second season now?
I guess third. So, yeah, no.
Third season, wow.
Third season.
And it's hosted by LL Cool J, and it has Chrissy Teigen, Mrs. John Legend, on there, and she's pretending she's the DJ. Or I'm not sure exactly what her job is, other than to say vapid things and look incredibly hot. Do I pretty much have it summed up?
Sure.
Okay. So last night, it's Jay Leno versus Craig Ferguson. And Craig Ferguson did that Ramones song, I Want to Be Sedated. And Jay Leno did Sweet's 1974 song, Ballroom Blitz, who nobody but me and Dan remembers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know.
So I was never a huge Jay Leno fan. maybe in his days when he was on the Letterman show as a guest and he was coming on to talk about what his beef was, or when he was one of the great stand-up comedians in America. But that's going back a long way. And now, here's Jay Leno, who, I looked it up, 66 years old, and Craig Ferguson, 54 years old. And they're out there and they're pretending to lip-sync to these songs.
Sounds atrocious.
It was atrocious. Jay Leno has no sense of rhythm. Now, he knows the rhythm of a joke, but musically, not a, it was like not a 66-year-old guy, but a 70 or 86-year-old guy up there pretending to sing along with a song called Ballroom Blitz by Sweet, which is not his personality at all.
No.
It just didn't fit. And then they go
to
commercial break, and they come back, and now Leno is dressed up in a white suit with a white tie and a white shirt, and he's doing the Supreme song, My World is Empty Without You.
Oh, my.
From the 60s. And then Craig Ferguson comes out, and he's wearing a dress with an orange cat on the front. And he sings the ABBA song, Take a Chance on Me, which has got to be from 40 years ago. And they keep cutting to these young women in the audience, because I guess that's the demo for that show.
Yeah.
They're all like 25 years old, and they're all going crazy for songs that they don't know. There's no way these girls know this song. And guys who are their grandfather's age.
It's because the applause sign and the crazy signs were going
off. It's because a TV camera is pointed at them.
Oh, yeah.
Now, have you ever watched that show?
No, I never
have. I've watched the entire first season.
You did?
I watched every episode in the first season.
Why?
When this started, so I thought the Jimmy Fallon bit was interesting enough. We saw a promo for it on Spike TV, whoever has it. And I was like, oh, we should watch this. And when this started, it was actually sort of fun. Because the idea was people came out and lip-synced to songs that they got to pick. And early on, with the first several people to do it, and I think Dwayne Johnson was one, Terry Crews was early on. These are sort of big guys, and they were, it brought them out of their shell. It humanized them in a way, because when we're in our car, we're all singing along or doing things.
All right.
And so that was cool. Well, the way the show works is the first song used to be a bit more straight up. They might have on like a jacket, but by and large, they were on the stage just about alone, sort of.
Right.
And then the second song, there's a bit more of a production that went into it.
A bit more of a production.
Well, at first. I'm saying at first.
Oh, okay.
By the end of the first season, it transitioned to where 85% of their performance was, oh, I learned this dance move, or I can do this. And it was not about like the fun part that we could relate to.
There's
like
a whole segment. Production. There's a whole segment showing them backstage. It's like a Dancing with the Stars rehearsal.
Yeah.
Oh. And you have the choreographer showing them what they're going to do, and the wardrobe woman is showing them what they're going to wear, and all of these things. And basically, they're just hired talent. They haven't chosen the song. They haven't chosen the choreography.
Yeah.
They're going out there and they're trying to perform that. Now, that might work if you get like an Anna Kendrick on the show, or an Anne Hathaway.
I think she might have been on.
Or
John Krasinski was, because he did one of the best on Fallon's show.
Yeah. Okay, so he can do that sort of thing. He's one of the producers of the show.
Yeah.
Jay Leno can't pull that off.
No, it's gotten awful. I can't, and it's even spun off. Now there's a kids one. Now there's a kids lip sync battle on Nickelodeon or whatever. And it is atrocious. And I'm not saying the kids aren't talented.
Kid actors?
Well, they come up and they're like, I'm just a shy person. And then you see the girl out there and she's like twerking and you're like, no, you're not a shy person.
But are they actresses and actors? Young,
they
like,
say
like
they're
Muni kids?
No, they're, I mean.
Disney shows?
No, they're not on Disney shows. They say they're normal kids, but it's the way these kids act and their parents like push
them. You can tell they're
total stage families where it's.
This will be your big break, honey. Come on, practice.
And these kids are singing songs they don't know at all.
Yeah.
Like they
I'd like to
know.
Do Losing My Religion by R.E.M.
There was nine!
There was one kid.
You know that song! There was one kid who kept doing backflips. It was like he could do a backflip. Oh. And we're like, oh, do that a dozen times. What does that have to do with lip syncing?
He's Ozzy Smith. No,
that show needs to be done. And Chrissy Teigen adds like this, the women watching it can sort of relate to what she's saying. And
really? Because I can't understand anything she's saying. It's vapid stuff.
But I think that she's just kind of there as a cheerleader to keep the energy up, because LL Cool J can't do that. I mean, that man is...
I think they do that with these shows, though. Like you said, you like the first season, and then they start adding crap to it. It was like Deal
or
No Deal.
Well, they run out of fun people to do it. Yeah.
Deal or No Deal was fun when it was just picking the cases. Then they started having to add all of this crap to it, and then backstories of the people, and then bringing people. It's like, just stick to what worked the first season.
You know that there's now going to be a spinoff from James Corden's Carpool Karaoke.
That does not surprise me.
That's another half-hour syndicated show that they're going to be doing, which he will not be on.
No, it's like...
He's the one who makes that bit work.
Yeah.
He's the one who gets Lady Gaga or Madonna or Stevie Wonder or Adele.
Bruno Mars.
Yeah, I mean, it works with it because he's there and he's enthusiastic and he's a singer. I think it's overdone a little bit.
It's gotten more. The first few was just him there singing, and now it's like, oh, Elton John, you're with me, and then in between songs, they're like changed into full Elton John gear. And I'm like, right. This is stupid now. Just sing and do a little interview in between each song.
And by the way, he does not have to start off everyone with, thank you so much for helping me drive to work today.
All right.
Come on. We get the bit.
Yeah, we
got that the first 40 times. Now everybody knows. Just say, hi, welcome to Carpool Karaoke. Look, it's me and Sting, or whoever. Whatever it is.
He had George Clooney and Julia Roberts, I think, on one.
In the back seat with somebody.
And that was actually pretty funny.
Yeah.
It was
a promotion for that movie they did, The Money Monster, last year.
Yes, that's right.
That's what it was.
I think Bernie Madoff was the other person in the car.
I don't think so.
You.
No. All right. A couple of other TV things. You said you had something about Wayne's World?
Wayne's World, 25th anniversary next month.
Of the movie.
Of the movie. Theatrical release. So they're doing one of these special events. February 7th and 8th, you can buy the tickets and go see this, but then there's a pre-recorded post-film roundtable with the director, Peter Travers, a movie critic, and some cast members. So if you're
by some cast members,
sure it's not Dana Carvey and
Mike Myers. What else is Mike Myers doing these days?
I don't know. Aren't they doing like Love Guru 7 straight to DVD?
I hope not.
But that's just kind of neat. I think I like that movie, and I never got to see it on the big screen. I would have been. It would have been inappropriate. I'm pretty certain Child Protective Services would have been waiting for my parents.
You should have taken your grandfather, Jay Leno. Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee has been sold to Netflix, which I think is a perfect match. The only people who are not going to like this are people who don't have Netflix, who liked watching the show on his website. Now, here's the part of this that is hysterical to me. This show was on a service called Crackle, which is owned by Sony.
Yes.
No one knew that, because to watch the show, you didn't have to go to Crackle. You just went to comediansandcarsgettingcoffee.com, which I still do to this day. In fact, this morning, I watched this week's new episode, which is with Cedric the Entertainer, who is hysterical. And the two of them get along really, really well. It's a good episode. That and last week's Norm MacDonald, both really good stuff, keeping the series going forward. But you didn't have to ever go to Crackle. I think 99.9% of the people who watched that show didn't even know what Crackle was. I finally looked it up this week. Most of the stuff that they have on there, the vast majority of stuff on Crackle, is Sony movies that have run on cable TV 1,000 times, which nobody's looking for, and one original show starring Charlie Sheen. So that tells you how low they've fallen.
More than that. I've seen a couple other shows.
You have?
Yeah, because I watched Comedians in Cars on Coffee through
getting Crackle.
Wow, that was just not English. Through Crackle, because it was easier to stream through my Chromecast for a while.
Oh, okay.
So it was just a little button. They had a show called The Art of More that I think was about thieves. They did Sports Jeopardy. That was just Jeopardy about sports. They had an animated show called Super Mansion.
But how big was the audience for these shows on a service that most people had never even heard of?
I want to say last time I went on, only one of them got a second season. So
yeah, they definitely did not capitalize on taking whatever momentum they had with Jerry having the show on their service.
But that's because they didn't have to go to the service to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a bad deal for them. It's great for Netflix, not just because they get the 24 new episodes. They get the 59 old episodes. And he is now contractually obligated to provide them additional, like they get right of first refusal, I believe, on additional scripted and non-scripted shows.
He's going to do two stand-up specials for them.
Oh, which is that's huge.
He's still a huge name in stand-up comedy.
So what you're saying is that Crackle broke away from Snap and Pop.
Yes.
Started his own serial.
Pop is actually... actually a channel on TV that nobody knows exists.
You're right.
FYI was G4. Did he come up with that?
He did. Speaking of Netflix, they've also signed Dave Chappelle for 3 specials next year. 1 new one and 2 from his vault that he's done over the last year. He didn't have any place to put these, but he filmed his own shows at Austin City Limits and the Hollywood Palladium and then waited for somebody to make him a deal. And so here we have an example of Dave Chappelle and Chris Rock. Both used to do stand-up specials for HBO. Now they're with Netflix as well. By the way, he's getting over $40 million. Chris Rock got $40 million for 2, so Dave Chappelle is probably getting 50
or
60.
That is a great deal for Netflix. And I don't know if you ever look at Netflix. Go look at their comedy originals, their stand-up. They are bigger than HBO. They are bigger than Comedy Central. They're releasing. They just did Jim Gaffigan.
Yes.
Cinco.
We're going to watch it this weekend. We
watched it.
Is it good?
It's good.
Well, we just watched Eliza Schlesinger.
How good was that?
Ever heard of her?
Yes.
She had one. I'd never even heard of this woman, but it came across my Netflix screen. I said, okay, let's watch it. My wife and I loved it. It's actually her 3rd Netflix special.
Yep. Yes. And what you should do, this is my suggestion, if you like stand-up comedy, it should be beginning again on Friday nights. Comedy Central has something called the Half Hour, and it's half-hour comedy specials. They do 2 back-to-back. It's like 9 and 9:30 or 10 and 10:30. Record those, watch them. These people will be on Netflix before you know it, because Netflix is just going out there and picking the best. Yeah. And what's nice about the Half Hour, you can watch 5 minutes. If you're not interested, you're done. And if you like them, it's 22 minutes. It's going to leave you wanting more.
Mm-hmm.
And then Netflix has an enormous catalog of these things.
It's remarkable what they're doing there and taking over that field that HBO used to own, the uncensored stand-up comedy specials.
And, speaking
of comedians, the Hollywood Reporter says that TBS has ordered 10 episodes of a new show called The Cops, not Cops, but The Cops, an animated series from Louis C.K. and Albert Brooks.
Wow.
They initially developed it for FX early last year. FX passed, and so now they've got Greg Daniels, who was the showrunner of The Office.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be joining the show. Louis C.K. and Albert Brooks, vocal talents as 2 Los Angeles patrolmen trying their best to protect and serve, sometimes failing at both. The promo says, ride with them as they patrol one of the biggest cities in the world, then go home with them and be glad you're not married to either of them.
Wow.
So that's going to be coming out probably sometime in 2018. They're going to make it this year.
Netflix also, House of Cards, they just announced a return date.
Yeah.
May 30th for season 5. I don't know how many seasons this is supposed to go. I have to say it's wrapping up at some point here. And I'm a full season and a half behind. Like, I ran out of steam halfway.
So you didn't see the part where the president's head exploded. Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry. Do you remember what a big deal that was for first couple seasons of House of Cards?
Yeah. One other Netflix note. I don't want to make this the Netflix show, but
it should be, though.
One other note about them.
It should be.
Last year, or about a year and a half ago, I was raving about a show that Phil Rosenthal made. He was the showrunner of Everybody Loves Raymond, who then did a very funny documentary called Exporting Raymond.
Yes.
He then did a food show called I'll Have What Phil's Having, where he went to a half a dozen locations around the world, and he just loves all sorts of food, plain and exotic, and tried it and talked in these cities to the people who made it and introduced us to all sorts of things, and he ate some rather weird things and some rather delicious-looking things. His show's been picked up by Netflix. They'll take the 6 shows that he did for PBS, which did not renew him, and they'll make another 24 episodes over the course of the next few years. So he'll be traveling the world.
This is how they're going to do it. 1,000 hours a year of original programming. It's not all in-house. Sometimes they're just buying it and distributing it. There's new shows. I can't even keep up. Forget the rest of TV. I can't keep up with Netflix.
Yeah.
I
don't know if you remember this. Ian, you do, and maybe Dan, you do too. Remember in 2001, when I was doing the midday show here, I had a guy named James Rocky on my show every week.
You would give away Netflix subscriptions.
Yeah. That's right. And he would come on every Tuesday and talk about, here are the new movies that are available today on Netflix. And he did that with me for, it must have been 2 or 3 years, right?
Yeah.
Nobody was talking about Netflix at the time. This was probably one of their best promotional vehicles, and he was really good at it, talking about those things. They don't have that anymore, because if they did, it would take up the entire day.
Oh, you could do a show. You could do a Netflix show every week and talk about only what's new that week.
Yeah.
And it could fill an hour.
Amazing.
I want to mention this. Next week, there's a movie coming out called A Dog's Purpose. A video has been circling. This is a story of a young boy with his dog. The dog is eventually, he gets old and doesn't make it. The dog's spirit is then reincarnated and keeps trying to find its way back to this one boy as he grows up until he becomes Dennis Quaid, an adult, and they reunite.
Dog becomes Dennis Quaid?
No, the dog is constantly...
The boy becomes Dennis Quaid.
And the dog keeps coming back. There is a video that is out there, and you can go watch it if you want. I'm going to describe it. It's at one scene, the dog has to swim down a river to save something, save the boy or something. Well, this was done in controlled rapids. They created essentially a big pool and pushed a current down. The German Shepherd, which is what the dog is in this life, I guess, in the movie, did not want to get in. It is visibly not wanting to get in. So they throw the dog in.
Then
hits the end. He reaches the end of the pool and goes underwater.
Oh, no.
And it takes the divers not a small amount of time to get to it. Universal canceled the premiere of this movie. I may review this next week. I don't know. I'm telling you right now, whether or not it's the greatest movie ever, don't go see this piece of garbage.
Yeah.
Anyone who does this to a dog in this day and age is ridiculous. Anyone who owns that dog should not own it anymore, because a dog, unlike, can't express their desire not to be a show dog.
The dog was expressing his desire. I don't want to have to jump in the water.
But the owner signed the contract and stood there and let this happen.
Ugh.
This is despicable. I may review this movie just to tear it to shreds. I'm not even certain. This may be the last I ever mention it.
Yeah, it should be.
Regardless, A Dog's Purpose. Don't see it.
All right,
did the dog die or did they get it out?
They got it out, but don't go see this garbage movie.
That's the showbiz stuff for this week here on the Big 550 KTRS.